and House Wire Environment, Friday, June 11th, and we will open a hearing on Senate Bill 775. And Senator Cito, come on, tell us about this.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. This morning I'm here to support Senate Bill 775. Originally, this bill was going to move the CASA program into the courts. It raised a level of debate. It came to me from one of my constituents who is a CASA volunteer. In fact, I think he won Volunteer of the Year, or was awarded Volunteer of the Year this year. And basically what transpired over the beginning of the debate on this was a bill that ended up being a task force for both the Commission on Children and Families and the courts to take a look at where the CASA program should be located and how it should be funded and how it can meet the requirements of the statutes. The CASA program is a really wonderful program. I believe there are more volunteers waiting to be able to serve as CASA than we are able to train. And so the whole idea around moving it to the courts was maybe so that it could gain more financing. But that didn't happen this session, but what did happen is this task force to really take a very careful look at it, and basically I see this as a pro-CASA bill, because what our desire is to try to get every child that needs a CASA volunteer, and CASAs are court-appointed special advocates. That's what that acronym means. And this, I think, will help us meet that goal. So I urge your support and passage of this bill.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Just a comment. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the measure that's before us, and I spoke with my CASA director yesterday, and she told me of their wholehearted support, and she's recently recruited my husband, and he has he's on his first assignment. So.
Great. Other questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I also support this. The Senator and I have had many conversations over the interim about this. I have some concerns about just actually moving it without really understanding fully the implication, and it's been my desire to increase the funding for CASA, and whatever vehicles we need to make that happen I think are appropriate. And I do think Senator's right that this is going to give us probably a better picture of exactly what we have out there. And, you know, we know what the need is. Certainly, I happen to be blessed by being from a county that's probably got the highest percentage of kids that are served in CASA. I think we're in the neighborhood of 90% in Douglas County. And we're very proud of that, and I've been involved with them for several years now. And the desire, of course, is to get all counties to that level, and this is going to help us get there. It is an incredibly valuable program.
Very good. Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Senator Tito.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Donna Middleton?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Donna Middleton. I'm the Director of the Commission on Children and Families. And with me is Mr. Tim Travis from the Judicial Department.
Sure.
And we are here to testify in support of Senate Bill 775. As Senator Qutub mentioned, this bill started out as a bill in which there was a request to move the CASA program from the State Commission on Children and Families. We felt through discussions with Tim and with Nancy Miller that while that may be appropriate in the long run, there had not been enough time to work together and look at all the issues surrounding the CASA program to make that decision. And so the bill was changed to ask for this interim task force, if you will, with membership from the judiciary, as well as the commission, as well as state and local CASA representatives. And what we hope to do is give a report at next session that is a sort of a broad perspective of the CASA program, its value. And I absolutely agree. It has a value that is pretty overwhelming to communities. They've done nothing but very good work. The issue of funding continues to be an issue. One of the reasons that the support for CASA, as far as the commission was concerned, was that the CASA program is a 100% total pass-through program. There was no resources for coordination or support at the state level of this program. And with about 426 plus a biennium, there was no way that you could take some money off the top and give any community enough resource to even begin to look at a CASA program. So the commission chose not to do that. Unfortunately, it also was unable to support, I think, the CASAs at the level they should have been supported. So thus the sort of the momentum to look at moving the program. I think this is a much better way to go. It's a very, and I'll let Tim talk as well, a very collaborative process. Both judiciary and the commissioner at the table and want to move forward with this task force.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Timothy Travis with the Oregon Judicial Department. I'd like to say at the outset that the Oregon Judicial Department did not go looking for CASA. It's sort of like someone showing up on your doorstep and saying, can we live here? And there are some things that have to be worked out if the decision is made for it to come over. There are some legal things that have to be worked out and changed as well. Because, for example, the CASAs are now a party to juvenile court cases. It is not appropriate to house a party in the same branch of government with the judge. That just doesn't look good. We are in support of this process as well. And we're hoping that the conversation that comes out, even if CASA doesn't move, will lead to some creative solutions for the funding problem. I would like to tell the committee that I am a former CASA myself. I still wear my CASA pin practically every day. I'm very proud of that, as I am proud of having also been an attorney representing children. It's a very important program, and I'm very personally committed to seeing it succeed. Do we want to talk about that one piece?
Yes, there is on section one, number three, it does talk about the administrator and staff director shall designate one facilitator for the planning and advisory committee with the right to vote in the case of a tie. We were really envisioning this as less of a voting opportunity than a very collaborative, cooperative process in which the facilitator may be a person on one of these people who's already listed that would chair and have the committee go forward. We did not envision this to be a very official process because we are both in agreement that we will work very cooperatively together. So I was wondering if there was a definition or something of that particular line in this bill. Anyway, or would that be acceptable to have it in that process as far as having the chair and having the chair facilitate? And also, if the chair would be a voting member, obviously, of the process.
Mr. Fisher, I'm sorry.
And go ahead, but as I read it, as it's set up there, it is different than a task. It is, you're gaining some a direction here to be a committee, and I think that also requires a chair, but most task force I'm in, we've always appointed a chair anyway, and we did go through a voting process, however official I think that you want to make that.
Yep. Mr. Chairman, the committee, the Judicial Department has always said that we were not going to accept CASA, even if every CASA in the state came to our doorstep, unless we had the permission of the Commission on Children and Families to accept CASA, because we're not interested in wrenching them away. Setting this language up with a vote in case of a tie, it gives it the wrong flavor, frankly. And I must apologize to the committee. Nancy Miller is the person from our office who's been doing this, working on this bill, and she is out of town, and I'm sort of standing in for her, and I've only been peripherally involved with this, but if there was some way that we could perhaps eliminate that one line, I think that it would really be helpful just to the ambiance of the process.
Yeah, Tim, I think I'd agree. When you look at it, if this 14-member group is evenly split, that's really not much of a consensus process here. And I would hate to think that we are making decisions based on a hired person, more or less, making the decision for this group that my belief is we'll come to consensus on this. And I think that's put in there as a contingency that I don't think we should get to. And I think if this group is that divided on an issue, the group needs to be able to spend more time on it. I have some of the same feelings that Mr. Travis has, on the front end, we've got the Citizens Review Board that is in the Judicial Department that oversees this program, and it's, having them housed in the same shop as the people they're overseeing, I think also gives me some pause for concern here. I think the whole genesis of this entire bill was to give more secure and higher level of funding to CASA. And it's my desire that what we come up with here is, at the end of all this, is a process that allows us to identify resources and leave CASA where they are, because I think they're in the appropriate place now. And just make sure that we have and there's good collaboration now, but that may be something that needs to be better defined also. When we get to working on this, I would be willing to do a conceptual amendment to eliminate that language, simply because I think this sends the wrong message.
Okay. And I think we're in agreement with that.
Yeah, I
think.
This is in place of these two.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you
very much. Now, is there anyone else in the room that would like to give testimony on Bill 775 that did not sign up? Okay. Close the hearing on Senate Bill 775. Open a work session on Senate Bill 775.
Mr. Chair, I would move to conceptually amend the Ann Gross version of Senate Bill 775 by eliminating on line 23 of page 1 of the bill the words "with the right to vote in case of a tie."
So will there be a period after committee?
Period after committee.
Okay. Any other comments here?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, this doesn't really change anything except I think the flavor of what this group's going to do. And I think it's, I understand probably the reason that was put in, the fact is if we're 7-7 in this committee, they just can have a lot more work to do. And our hope is that we come with some consensus on whatever proposal comes back to the legislature in 2001.
Okay. Do I have any objection? Motion? So moved.
Mr. Chair?
It's approved.
I move Senate Bill 775A as conceptually amended to the floor with the House recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves Senate Bill 775A as amended to the floor with the DPAS recommendation. Any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Cruz?
Aye.
Representative Atkinson?
Excuse?
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Dianella?
Here. Hi. I'm here too.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Morgan.
recused.
Representative Taylor.
Aye.
Chair Welch.
Aye. Having required number of votes, Senate Bill 775A, if amendment passed, flow do pass recommendation, and Les Crew said he would like to carry that. Now I will allow the other members to vote when it comes back. I'm sure they want to when they come back in here. In fact, we can, before I close, we can allow Morgan to vote if she would like to take a second to consider Senate Bill 775.
Good bill should pass.
Everyone voted for it. We did a conceptual amendment. Representative Cruz's recommendation and council.
Thank you. We will all vote for it.
And how do you vote? Representative Morgan. Representative Morgan is recorded. Voting aye. Thank you very much. And we will close the work session on Senate Bill 775. And we'll, I think we have some people here to give testimony at 11:25. Is that right, Harrison?
I'm not sure, but I just see the anybody who's here for that.
Okay.
You do.
All right. No, no fine. Okay. I'll let you vote when you come back.
Sure.
We do. Okay. Person, will you give us a... I'll open a hearing on Senate Bill 1125.
Senate Bill 1125A modifies procedures related to condemnation. The bill requires that the condemner provide the owner with 15 days of written notice before scheduling an appraisal inspection, and also requires them to allow the owner to participate in that. Requires the condemner to make a written preliminary offer accompanied by all appraisals the condemner has, and give 40 days time to consider that offer. If the just compensation is deemed to be less than $25,000, it modifies that requirement for an appraisal. Requires condemner to provide the owner with, upon expiration of the preliminary offer, requires that the condemner make one final offer with at least 20 days consideration before filing a complaint for condemnation. Requires an exchange of appraisals between condemners and owners at no later than 60 days before trial. And it prohibits the owner from relying on a non-disclosed appraisal unless that appraisal has been disclosed, with the exception that when property has a when the condemner is claiming the property has a $25,000 value, the owner can rely on an undisclosed appraisal that is not more than $15,000 more than the offer. There is also a process for setting up, the owner can choose binding arbitration with values less than $30,000, non-binding arbitration with values up to $60,000. With that, I think I'll stop and let more knowledgeable minds than mine talk.
And we do have Senator Bryant with us.
Thank you, Ms. Morgan.
Senate Bill 1125 hearing. Yeah.
Neil Bryant, Senator from District 27, and it's good to see you again. I have a feeling I'll see the Rules Committee frequently in the last few weeks of session. In 1997, the House and the Senate and the Governor signed Senate Bill 1136, and it was an important bill dealing with rights and responsibilities of government as they go through a condemnation process, and my goal was to eliminate some practices, including trial by ambush. And I'm happy to report that legislation has worked well. It's created more settlements, less costly trials. This bill, Senate Bill 1125, is what I would call some technical changes and some cleanups resulting from that. The Dash A3 amendments you have before you, unfortunately, were not circulated in a timely manner. My staff attorney on judiciary, her father had a series of heart attacks, and she had to leave. So consequently, what should have been done last week didn't happen until just recently. There are two options. One would be to adopt the Dash A3, or if the committee wouldn't mind staying open a couple more days, allowing the people who have been working on this to review these Dash A3s, and then come back with what I hope to be consensus, and that would avoid needing to go to a conference committee if there are problems.
Senator, I'm not planning on moving this
today. And I called you the rural
more corners to talk about. Oh. I think there's some other concern, too, so you'll be hearing some.
Okay.
Also. So, we plan on keeping it open, and if we can resolve that, we'll continue to move on.
Good. Thank you very much. We'll work on this the next few days, and then probably I'll notify your staff when we're ready to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Linda Main, City of Portland. And Beth, August 2. Come on forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Beth Vargas Duncan of the League of Oregon Cities. I apologize for my late sign-up, but we were having some hallway discussions about particularly some cities' concerns that they became more aware of the intricacies of the language at a later date. And I'll go ahead and let Linda Mang from the City of Portland address the concerns a little bit more in detail.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Mang. I'm Chief Deputy City Attorney for the City of Portland. We have some concerns about this bill, and I had some testimony prepared, but I think since the chair has indicated that the bill will not move, we would like to be able to work with the other parties and try to come up with some appropriate language to address the issue so that we have an equal exchange or equivalent exchange of appraisals, and we, as Senator Bryant said, do trial by ambush and make a practical system that will work for everyone. So rather than detail that right now, I think we'd be happy to work with all the parties to try to come up with the appropriate language.
Very good. I would suggest there would be a work group that those who want to work on this just get together and work on the details, and we'll leave this open. I'll talk to the speaker, and if we come to the point in time that was necessary for the bill to move with amendments, maybe we'll still be open here.
Okay.
So you realize that we're winding down here. So, okay.
We understand.
Very good.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee?
That doesn't mean we're leaving. We're just winding down.
That's why I said winding down.
Thank you.
Al Leitner.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Al Leitner with the Department of Transportation. Very quickly, I'll be working with the task force or the work group on this bill. It is very important that something get passed in this regard. There is confusion about understanding what condemnation is. There really are two parts. There's an administrative part, the part that I deal with, that deals with the property owner, negotiations, exchange of appraisal, and comprises what I feel is more than half of what the issue is. And then the other portion is what the attorneys get into as far as protocol and procedure. And if we fail in our negotiations and it has to go through a court process, then that's where they get involved. And this bill kind of is working in both of those arenas, and that's where some of the confusion and difficulty lies. And I'm very, very hopeful that it'll be resolved.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. Any questions, Paul? Okay. Thank you. Paul Snyder?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties, and I agree with the comments that have already been made.
Mm-hmm.
We're more than willing and anxious to participate in the work group.
Great. I'll be more than happy to. I don't think we need to do an official. I just think there's enough people around here. we can call an official work group, but I think there's enough concern to everybody get together here as quickly as their schedule works out and realize that we are growing close to the end of the session. So I think they need a bill and they try to get to work on it. All right. Thank you. And that's all we have. Anyone else get one to check one on Senate Bill 1125? It has not signed up. Okay. We will close the hearing on Senate Bill 1125. We'll open a hearing on Senate Bill 678. Harrison, would you like to give us a review?
I will, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 678B creates the crime of interference with agricultural operations. When a person, while on the property of another engaged in agricultural operations, intentionally or knowingly obstructs, impairs, or hinders, or attempts to obstruct, impair, or hinder the agricultural operations, classifies this new crime as a Class A misdemeanor, subject to a one year in jail and up to $5,000 fine. The bill does also define agricultural operations to include logging, forest management, mining, ranching, and farming, or farming.
Now, it looks like this bill passed unanimously on this Senate. There were only one that was out for business. Okay. Give us the vote on the Senate side. Thank you, Harrison. We'll start with our Yamhill County Sheriff on hand. And Yamhill County Deputy Forest. It would be R.M. Clausen. Welcome this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sheriff Norm Hand, Yamhill County. And on my right is Butch Clayton, who is my Forest Patrol deputy. I'm here today to testify in support of this bill for a number of reasons. I would like to start with first saying I'm not one to create laws when there are laws on the books, and that's what this looks like. However, it clearly is not. I can go back some 35 years or so, maybe a little more, of working on a dairy farm and farming with my parents, my grandparents, and working in the woods, and have personally been affected by damage that was done that would be, in this day and time, considered a C misdemeanor or criminal mischief, kids playing around, in that I personally lost money by being sent home from logging operations, along with probably 35 to 40 others that were there, and it was merely because someone came up and let the air out of the tires on all of the rigs at the place. We showed up and were sent home. The financial impact is much more than somebody cutting up a garden hose. And out in the hallway, somebody made the comment that this was nominated as the Scare a Cow Bill. I took somewhat offense to that in that it does impact a lot of people when they're done, whether it be cutting a lock, as I believe Mr. Purvis will show, and we have some materials to hand out here on damage to logging equipment that's there. But it is substantially a bill that makes the punishment fit the crime. And I also supported this as a felony because I think we need to send a message out to people that you can't take away the livelihood of others and endanger the people who are out there. So I would certainly be open to any questions.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm not an attorney, so I guess the Class A misdemeanor is in the same, it's a little bit more stringent than the criminal mischief and less than the
Class C felony. It's the in between.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's a year in jail, and I don't know what the fine is for that, but it is a year in jail, in county jail. A felony would be in the state penitentiary.
Sheriff, it looks like we are changing a particular statute that had this had a maximum prison of 5 years and $100,000 fine. Looks like we're kind of that's lowering everything here. But we did move this to a Class A misdemeanor then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. And talking with the people that are involved, they're satisfied with that at this point in time. Again, you have a lot. What a Class A misdemeanor gives you is the ability to make probable cause arrests on it. When somebody goes to court, it isn't going to be a slap on the hand if, in fact, there is substantial damage, substantial loss. Most often, or I should say often, restitution is given at time of sentencing, whether it be an A misdemeanor or a C misdemeanor, but the folks don't have that. And I believe we need to send a message out at times somebody up in the woods or wherever running around the four-wheel drive thinks it's funny to bust windows out or shoot windows out of a vehicle. So.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, that's me, my first.
Could you clarify again what the situation of the Class A misdemeanor is?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, Class A misdemeanor, according to statute, is punishable by up to 1 year. Class B misdemeanor, up to 6 months. A Class C misdemeanor, 30 days. Similarly, the fines are $5,000, $2,000, and $1,000. Also have the felony information here if you'd like that.
That's fine.
And the original bill had placed it pretty heavy, but they looks like they realigned it here in their amendments with present law.
And as written, it sounds like it would cover such things as letting air out of tires.
That's correct. Any interference, Mr. Chair, Representative Merkin, any interference with agricultural logging, forest management, mining, or ranching.
Is this bill aimed at the first type of logging construction, Genesis?
I'm sorry, sir.
Is the genesis of this bill earth first type logging construction?
I Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I would let Mr. Purvis for press talk about how this came about and how it got here at the NBR.
Great.
President, please. Yeah, Mr. Chair, in response to Representative Murphy, it would certainly cover that. There's a lot of stuff that some people would consider mischief. It is pure vandalism that happens when, and I think it's more directed at that than any sort of organized type of environmental violence, I guess would be a term for it.
We, as property owners and forest lands, I know we've faced just, especially during hunting season, faced sometimes just criminal mischief out there. And in the springtime, our kids will run up their parties and then go on your land, tear your gate down so they can get back up on the roads. Some of those things are just, you know, they're very problem, very much of a problem. Mark was first.
I'm very aware of the problem with property damage. I know the number of the camps that I've worked at in the past have a lot of damage over the winter, but it was always my impression that physical damage was covered by their statutes, and it was my, just in granting with this, is that indeed the case that physical damage is really well covered elsewhere, but this broadens the net to capture people who are obstructing agriculture operations but aren't necessarily engaging in physical damage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Merkley, Again, Mr. Purvis could address the intent on this. What I see it as an enforcement piece is that someone may go up and in the case of a camp, break some windows. The amount of damage may not come to more than a C misdemeanor, which is 30 days. Or we see someone up painting graffiti, for instance, on the camp buildings or those kinds of things. At this point in time, that again is a C misdemeanor and is not punishable by, in fact, a law enforcement officer without seeing that happen could not make a probable cause arrest, even if they found that happen. So what I think it does is makes the crime one that you can deal with on an appropriate basis with the right priority. If it were the cutting up of the garden hose type of thing that affects one person, certainly criminal mischief would be appropriate. But what we're talking here is the impact on agriculture, and the people that work there, the people who might go to your camp and that kind of thing. So I look at it as something we would use only when appropriate, and certainly there is the fear out there of law enforcement using this for the six-year-old kid that might tear up somebody's garden, and I don't think that's going to be the case.
I think the operative words here that we need to focus on are impair or hinder agricultural operations. And we do have the agricultural operations definition in here, too. So I think it defines them to an operation that it sounds like a tactic, something that is occurring right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we're, looks like it's focused.
I'd just like to make a statement that we're seeing more and more of this on farmlands, the people taking their four-wheel drive vehicles, and they're driving through the crops and just ripping them all up and just having a good time. And farmers come out, and the damage has all been done at night or some other time, and they do that at a crucial time with the crops. It is a problem. And there's more and more of it all the time.
I see this also includes mining, and I wondered if this matches with the measure we sent out about recreational mining. And you recall that independent miners bill.
Mm-hmm.
It had an offense, but I think it was a lesser offense.
I can't remember that either, Rescue 2. But you're right, there was something on that. I don't remember.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Rescue
2. That was a health bill, wasn't it?
I think it was.
If it was a health bill, there would probably be brought to attention if there's any conflict. I'm sure there'd be conflict amendments on the Senate side for the bill.
Mm-hmm. I think that'll the might to have our staff be able to trace there a little bit and get an answer for tomorrow morning on that. And maybe we can know if there's a significant difference or something that's a realignment on that. But I think we're all right. Okay. Any other questions for Cheryl? Thank you. You want to give testimony too?
I just wanted to, please, Chairman, please explain the pictures that you see in front of me. The one with the cable is a take-up line on the turnbuckles. What was done with that was it was cut almost in two. So when a load was put on, like when they started yarding the logs up, the cable would snap, and the logs would come down on whoever happens to be there, which is the loggers. The other one is a piece of loading equipment, it's a Traco, used on logging operations, also on the road maintenance up in the area. There were approximately 32 rounds of ammunition shot through that up in the woods. shut down the operation because the gauges were all shot up and everything else. So the whole day was spent trying to repair the piece of equipment so that the other man can get back to work.
And the other one is certainly a safety issue.
Yep. Luckily enough, they started it before the alarms were put on.
Any other? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks for coming. Jerry Purvis.
Could you give that to the staff, please?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jerry Purvis for the record, and I have a farm next to the city of Sheridan where I raise just a ton of red perfect cattle. I'm also a logging contractor for almost 50 years. I can't say much more than Sheriff Hand says, but I will support with the documents I give you. But out of Yamhill County, it's just a small amount. I would like to add that the interference with agriculture and logging is a real important role in the bill. We don't only lose equipment and theft and things like that. We lose in the interference of the operation. Sometimes it takes a day or a week, up to a week, to replace what they tore down. That means layoffs of the crew, which they don't like, and as I said in my letter there. Also, I'd like to say that aggregate does play an important part in this bill, because farming gets the rock, logging gets the rock. A lot of these aggregate operations furnish the road building. They do the whole thing. Their equipment gets damaged. And if you'd like to see the full view of what a bullet does to a lot, I'd have to have these back.
Sure.
You'd like to see them all fast and through.
Please do.
And would you pass it to the staff? And
oh, it looks like to see the staff.
Thank you.
Also, if you'd like to know how long I've been trying to get a law for to protect farmland, it's been 15 years that I've been here as a legislature trying to get a bill and I haven't made anything. And that's not my bill. It was sponsored by 6 senators and 2 representatives.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly do support it.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Your report, Mr. Purvis, has asked in the first report, would this cover that as knowingly impairing agricultural or logging?
Which page is it?
The first example you gave us, the incident report.
That's a list of things that were stolen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got it highlighted.
Yeah.
And the cost. I just give you the page of the cost.
Yeah. Would this bill cover theft as well as vandalism?
Well, anything they do in there is interference. Anything they do inside the property would be interference. And I don't know any other way that you can stop this because of the slap on the hand that we have now. I think it's a very fair bill. It's been trimmed. The bill's already been trimmed from the felony to the misdemeanor, a misdemeanor. And I think that really I support the felony, too. I think that I've had many, many encounters with these people where I've seven of them where I displayed a gun and at night. And I've got several people for the sheriff, but then they come and arrest them, and they're out free again. And then they come back out of retaliation and do more. I lost $10,000 because I caught one gun. I didn't have the machine insured. I thought I did, but they didn't have.
If I might just make a comment. I certainly understand the intent of the bill. My only concern is that I'm hearing from the counties I represent about they would be the persons who would be housing these people if they were sentenced up to 1 year. And I'm looking on our fiscal analysis we got, which says that it would depend, of course, upon the extent to which the district attorney chose to prosecute. So I'm assuming that will not mean somebody that picks up a pair of pliers is going to get the same year-in-jail treatment as someone who's shooting out your locks and letting out your lodgebox.
And we do on that, on our major report here, it does explain under the background there what is in current law. And I think this was established to fill the gap. What committee did this come out of?
It just came from Judiciary on the Senate side.
Okay. All right. I guess at least we had a Judiciary Committee review in that part.
Mr. Chair?
Kathleen Morgan.
Are we in work session or?
No, I'm just on hearing right at the moment. Okay. We've got a couple more of good testimony. Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to add one more. Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, they don't just turn the cattle loose. They shoot them, and they shoot parts off of the cattle. The bull's spectacles, they shoot them off, and they don't. It's not just a pair of pliers deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's interference, strong interference with agriculture.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Merkley.
I'm trying to get a sense of why those acts aren't covered. For example, damage to a bull, especially a bull that might be used for reproductive purposes, can be valued quite highly. Don't existing laws covering that level of damage to property address this issue?
Your tones are maybe the Glenn can ask. Thank you.
I'll be a little louder. Sorry. I'm trying to get a sense of why existing laws don't cover this type of damage. Certainly, it's a challenge to catch someone. Assuming you catch them, the value of a bull can be quite high if you destroy its ability to reproduce in a stud animal. Why don't existing laws address this?
Well, the price of my bull is worth about $3,000. And catching them, right, that's what you were asking. It's catching them.
Isn't that more the issue than the penalties under current law? If you can catch them, the penalties are substantial, are they not, under current law?
Could you relay that for me?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Glenn Sombrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and if I may answer. Every example that we have of, you know, shooting bulls, but maybe not killing them or just injuring them, may have, it's a burden of proof of the amount of value that it might be. It might be substantial and present law would cover it. It might be minor and present laws would be a slap on the wrist. So the burden of proof is still on the landowner, the operator of the ag operation, but because it says knowingly or intentionally, so we have that burden of proof. Sometimes it doesn't cover. The present law just doesn't cover it because there's nothing in present law that says if someone does this knowingly or willingly to interfere with the ag operation. And so to use another example, whether it's hard to see damage, an example that we've had is when someone knows that when cattle are on private property and they're not to be on federal land, but they simply go up and open the gate, knowing that that's going to interfere with that operation big time, because if those cattle are on the federal lands, the person could lose their permit, which would be the end of their operation. And we have those kinds of examples too. So the bill is written broad enough to catch those things, as the chairman said, that fall through the cracks that presently doesn't, that we capture. If I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to go over old ground here. I think you all understand the intent. I did just want to talk a little bit about the work group that we had after going to the Senate Judiciary Committee, where several issues were raised. And we did work with the defense attorneys and with the labor unions on this because the issue was raised about what about farm workers who want to have a protest, it's a labor dispute, on the property of the farmer. And so that is why that exemption has been put in to exempt that type of thing. Also, someone might claim that a public official was interfering with an ag operation by being on your property, so we exempted that as well, mm-hmm. to try to make sure that this was covered. I would like to also point out that this means on the property of that ag operation. Because the question was raised, well, what if someone was protesting on a county road and on public land and it interfered with someone getting down the road, say, with their wide combine? Would that, and so we exempted that. It has to be on the property of the landowner. Leave it alone unless there's some other questions. Well, there was one other question earlier that I might like to address. Yeah, the intent of what this, why this law originated. Was it for the earth first type or some other? And really, it's both. We do have situations where there are some groups who, as a group, write literature on how to shut down an operation, whether it be mining or logging or farming or ranching. And it's getting very serious. And I'll tell you from the cattle industry, there's just the majority of our people are on the edge right now of whether they're going to go bankrupt or go out of business or not. And people know that. They know it doesn't take but just a little bit more to push them over the edge. So we would like to, if this bill is passed from the cattlemen, we're going to try to advertise this and actually try to be a prevention from people doing this crime, as well as having some meat in the law that we can, no pun intended, that we can do something to set them.
Good idea. Questions from the committee? Anything else? Mr. Purvis, I thank you so much. I think you had, was there an issue of a parachute?
Pardon me?
People parachuting, landing on farmland too?
Mm-hmm. Well, that could be part of it, yeah.
Now, does that cover any of that? If somebody just drops out of the sky, tears up your corn patch, getting out, and leaves equipment behind?
Mr. Chairman, again, the burden of proof would be on the landowner.
Landowner
did they knowingly and willingly, or was it an act that the wind blew them? You know, did they purposely land on a particular farm to do some particular damage to stop that operation? So several steps of burden of proof to get through.
Yeah.
It could, but that's
at that point in time, it becomes a real negotiation factor between the parachutist and the farmer, on the landowner. Yeah.
We make some stories in here, Mr. Chair. Someone stole an outhouse.
I can pull off it. You're pretty thorough reading.
I know. And I wanted to just tell you that I was in a hot air balloon when we tried to land in a farmer's field in the Spokane area, and he was falling, so they asked permission. He said, no, so we went back up again. It was pretty dark land on the street, on the highway.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to add that this is not my deal.
Right.
Just jump piggyback on it because I'm a contract logger and I'm a farmer. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the bills I've had here in the last 15 years. And I've already given that up.
Well, I tell you, and I don't know how I missed signing up as a co-sponsor because I sure would have, but it, you know, the bills pass through here, thousands of them, and you don't get on all those that you support, but I certainly do too.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, one other thing that came out of judiciary in the beginning before we amended this bill to its present form was that, and partly in what Representative Mercury was talking about, is this bill needed? Is it necessary? And we did have a district attorney from Yamhill County come in and work with the work group and with the defense lawyers to point out where it's needed
mm-hmm.
to modify it so it gets the right thing done but doesn't accidentally do the wrong thing, not follow the intent.
I think that's the best selling point that I see is that it has had a work group with all interested parties and stakeholders, and it did go through a judiciary committee. So I think that's very positive. Very positive this time. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Terry Lammer?
Yes.
Good morning, Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Terry Lambert. I'm the State Issues Coordinator with the Oregon Small Woodlands Association and the landowner myself, forest landowner, and also contract logger. Some of what Mr. Purvis said has happened to him, has also happened to me and in our operation, and the Oregon Small Woodlands Association does support this bill. We feel that the concerns that were expressed in Senate Judiciary were rightfully addressed by the amendments,
mm-hmm.
and we think it's a good bill. And I think you've heard just about everything. One other thing I would like to point out, a few years ago, a person was logging about 3 miles west of Dallas and filled up a large diesel tank, had a lock on it, and that night someone broke in, went through the gate, broke the lock off, drained about 1,000 gallons of diesel on the land. It wasn't close to a stream. And of course, catching the perpetrators of something like that is very difficult. But something like this might make some people think twice before they pour 1,000 gallons of diesel out on the ground. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, I know I like the what Glenn Stonebrink mentioned. And added was that an education effort going on with this particular inciting the statute that should go through and it looks like it has strong support here. And hopefully we get that with the governor too. And it'll be another tool to help our law enforcement people. A little education goes a long way and stops some of this. And they don't get the calls, they can do other business too. I think that'll be a very positive effort. If our stakeholders out there will kind of go in and in their publications, maybe some other places, and publicize the law will need. Other questions, concerns? Thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
Pete Kett.
Chairman Welch, members of the committee, director, Pete Kett, associate director of government affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Just real brief, Farm Bureau wholeheartedly supports this bill. Excellent bill, should pass. Thank you.
Who gets money?
God gets testimony.
All right. I have no further testimony. Anyone else want to give testimony that has not signed on this list? Thank you.
Well, real quick,
we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 678. I think we've got plenty of support on this over at the moment.
I just wanted to make a comment that I've been watching this bill for a long time and wrote a letter to Senator Bryant to try to get it out of committee. And as someone who comes from a logging and ranching background, the vandalism is something that's a never-ending problem. It's extremely expensive. It's really frustrating. And there is oftentimes an element of safety to the crew, to the people that we send out to do these jobs when they come to these vandalized situations. My sentiment on this bill is somewhat the same as Representative Atkinson's on that bill that we did yesterday. I see this as being extremely watered down in relation to what the problem is, but it is definitely a step in the right direction, and I'm very interested in seeing this pass to the floor.
Thank you. I open the work session on Senate Bill 678. Thanks, Chris.
I need Senate Bill 678B to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves Senate Bill 678B to the floor to do pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative
Cruz? Aye. Representative Atkinson?
Aye.
Representative Evelyn?
Aye.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Torrey? Excuse?
Representative
Markey?
Aye.
Representative Markey?
Aye.
Chair Welch?
Aye.
And the Clyde number votes. Senate Bill 678 D in votes. Pass the floor to do pass recommendation. And Representative Gianella would like to carry this. Mm-hmm. Thank you. We close the work session on Senate Bill 678. And we can. Yeah, and the chair on Senate Bill 15, we are not going to reconsider. We're going to send it just, it's just going to continue on to the floor. We did get a delay order through the clerk's office, and all we have to do is just chair just declare at this point there won't be any further consideration on that or amendment, so we'll send it to the floor. And with that, we don't have any further business. I did want to allow the other members to vote on those bills.
Thank you.
Yeah. Which one, Representative Atkinson, have you not voted on? And anyone else?
Yeah.
Did you, I think you missed the
five,
okay? To allow Representative Atkinson to send the vote, allow Representative Atkinson to vote on Senate Bill 775. Hearing no opposition. How do you vote?
Aye.
Okay. Representative Morgan, did you vote on that one?
Yep, I did.
Okay. Okay. That's it?
Thank you very much.
Is there any other bill here?
Yes.
Let's see, Mr. Gattamore. Okay. No further business. We adjourn for the day.
One moment, I just make sure. 15 gets.